welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
I'm speaking with Stephen McNallan, who's a priest with the ALSA True Folk Assembly, an Odinist religious organization in the United States, and he's based in California. He recently intervened on behalf of the ALSA True Folk Assembly with a case of the oldest living North American corpse ever discovered, called the Kennewick Man, and I'll be talking with him about the significance of the Kennewick Man. Welcome, Stephen.
Hi. Welcome. Glad to see you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the significance of Kennewick Man?
Well, Kennewick Man is very important because this is possibly the best preserved archaic skeleton that we have in North America. There's really nothing that quite compares with it, although there are a number of other more or less contemporary remains. Kennewick Man is far and away the most nearly complete.
And where was he discovered?
In Kennewick, Washington.
Was this an archaeological dig, or what was happening there?
No, it all happened quite serendipitously. As it turns out, just about 2 years ago, a little bit more, a couple of college students were trying to get into the hydroplane races along the river. Apparently, it's a big annual event that they have there. And then, quite accidentally, they discovered upon this this rock that looked an awful lot like a human skull. And they looked, and by golly, it was a human skull. And from there, they called in the police, who called in the coroner. One thing led to another, and within a few days, it was very obvious that what they had on their hands was not your ordinary homicide, not just an ordinary body found in the river, if there is such a thing, but in fact, something much more mysterious and much more complicated.
Now, why is it that Kennewick Man was dated at 9,300 years and is, on the basis of that, considered the oldest body ever discovered, or the oldest preserved remains of a human being ever discovered in North America? Is that true, that we have no older, nothing older than 9,300 years?
Well, that is my understanding. Mm-hmm. As I said, we do have a number that are of the same era, and it is not clear to me if Kennewick Man is, you know, to the year the latest. But yeah, he does have a number of contemporaries. Mm-hmm. But certainly we're talking about among the very oldest remains on the continent.
Mm-hmm. Now, the archaeologists who studied Kennewick Man early on realized that he was quite different from other remains that they had studied. Why was that?
Well, the difference with Kennewick Man lies not so much in the difference with his contemporaries, because if you look at all of the remains from his time, they all have many of the same traits. But what is different is the comparison with later populations. Kennewick Man does not appear to be morphologically, you know, similar or morphologically related to the American Indians. His skull, his various long bones and so forth seem to have significantly different configurations from that particular set.
In particular, they're more similar to North Europeans.
Well, that's one interpretation, and we think it's a very intriguing one, especially when it is linked up with other information such as genetic markers, the oral lore of the Indians themselves, and a lot of other things.
So the scientists were early on stymied in their effort to study Kennewick Man once they realized that they had what appeared to be more of a European immigrant to the United States than the Siberian immigrant, right? And the local Indians, Indian tribes, quickly moved to have Kennewick Man buried. Is that a correct interpretation of the events?
That's basically what they wanted to have happen, yes. Dr. Chatters was in the process of studying the remains. The Army Corps of Engineers demanded their return, presumably to be turned over in very short notice to the Indian tribes, who had already announced that they would bury them immediately in a secret location with no further study.
So a suit was filed?
Actually, two suits were filed.
Okay.
One was filed by ourselves, which, of course, we can always go into in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And another one was filed by a group of scientists, some of the world's or some of the nation's leading scientists in these particular areas, who felt that it was very important that these remains get further study.
Now, the Army Corps of Engineers was operating under the assumption that all corpses of this type that were discovered in the United States were, in fact, ancestors of Native Americans, of our contemporary Native Americans, and that therefore our contemporary Native Americans would have rights as descendants to have the possession of these bodies. Is that correct?
Yes. That assumption is pretty much written into NAGPRA, which is the law that pretty much governs that sort of a repatriation situation.
Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act.
That's the one.
Okay.
And when this was put together, no one had really considered that, gee, there might have been other peoples here, mm-hmm. and that those peoples might even have been here before the people that that we now think of as American Indians.
So the dominant interpretation of the settling of the Americas before European settlements in the 15th century was that they walked across the Siberian Straits. But Kennewick Mann suggests the possibility that even earlier on there would have been sailors coming from Northern Europe and from Norway and Iceland in particular, correct?
Well, there's a couple of different ways of interpreting the information that's beginning to come to light. One way of looking at it is saying that these European-type people may well have come across what some scientists are now calling the Atlantic Crescent, sort of the counterpart to the Bering Land Bridge. Mm-hmm. And that at one point in prehistory, this area may have been navigable even on foot over ice but with short portages and so forth, to allow a sizable body of people to come across from Europe. Another possibility is that, in fact, this group of people could have migrated across the top of Eurasia and essentially come across the Bering Land Bridge in the same way that the ancestors of the American Indians did. So there's a couple of different ways of looking at all of it.
Okay. So your suit and the archaeologist's suit was successful recently.
Well, actually, the suit itself is still up in the air. What has happened is that the judge has decided that the remains needed to be moved from where they were because there had been a lot of problems with the particular facility and the way that in the past they had been handled. They need to be transferred to a different place for some kind of testing. Now, the nature of the testing is yet to be determined. What we would like to see is a comprehensive DNA testing just to find out who this individual is really most related to. I personally would love to see comparisons with Cheddar Man, who was studied here in England not that long ago, just a few months back. He's contemporary. And also with the Tarim Basin mummies out of Central Asia. I think that would be very interesting. The Indians don't want to see that kind of testing. It is obviously destructive, even though destructive of only a very small amount of bone. For religious reasons, they don't want that to happen, and it could be that they just really don't want to look at who this individual might be.
Hmm. So the suit was successful enough that there's now an injunction on the burial of the bones, and they have been moved to a museum?
That's true. That's mm-hmm. true. They've been moved to the Burke Museum up in Seattle for, as I said, some sort of testing, which we haven't gotten to yet.
On the Event Horizon website, I've linked to the Tri-City Herald coverage of the farewell ceremony that was conducted both by the Umatilla tribe and by the Alsatru Folk Assembly, saying goodbye to Kennewick Mann on his way to this testing.
Yes, actually, you'll find a couple of different sets of photos there. One set, the smaller set, is the most recent one that you've just referred to.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the photos that are up on the Tri-City Herald site are of a ritual that we did in Columbia Park near the place where the remains were found quite some while back. So there's actually two different rituals that are related to or that are referred to in those photographs.
Okay, so let's take a quick crack at what is Alsatru and Odinism, and what's the current size and shape of Odinism, the worship of the Old Norse gods in North America and North Europe and elsewhere?
Ooh, well, that's a nice big general one. Ooh, I'll just jump right in the middle of that, I guess. Alsatru is a revived and reconstructed version of a native European religion. And I suppose if one wanted to look closely, they could say, well, there's a number of native European religions. You could look at the Celtic beliefs, which are, in fact, very similar to ours, the Slavic religion, and so forth and so forth. Also true pretty much concentrates on, in fact, one could say, is the revived religion of the Scandinavian and Germanic peoples. So we sort of deal with the Northwest European outlook of things before the coming of Christianity.
And is it a monotheistic religion, a polytheistic religion?
We are proudly polytheistic. We feel that the universe is a much too complex place and a varied place to be summed up under the assumption that there's just one deity running everything. And besides, that gives us a chance to include goddesses, which we feel are very important. And in fact, it's been said, not by me originally, I hate to admit it, that a religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism.
Nice. Now, within the context of American neo-pagans, the Ulsa True and other Odinists are often in a kind of tension with the more feminist-oriented goddess religions. Would you say that that's correct?
I think that that is, unfortunately, somewhat true, yes. Mm-hmm. There's, in many cases, just kind of a different way of looking at the world. And you know, the fact that we recognize goddesses as well, and in fact, you know, strive for some sort of a balance, isn't enough to really overcome that. There's just, in some ways, a different basic worldview that does produce some tension, I think.
Odinists and the Ulsa True tend to be very warrior-centric, or at least the role of the warrior is very much valorized.
Well, yes, and I would have to qualify that. This is something that I think has evolved in modern Ulsa True a lot over the past. Many years ago, when I first became interested in this religion and began, in fact, the reconstruction of it here in North America, I was a young man, pumped full of testosterone, and probably giving a little more emphasis to the warrior image than it really was justified.
You were a journalist for some independence movements around the world, and were in the Army for a time.
This is true. I went straight from college to 4 years on active duty as an Army officer. After that, I got out of the Army and swore I'd never wear green, stand in line, or call anybody sir again. And then, of course, in a few years, found myself back in the National Guard, life being what it is. But over the years, I've come to realize that the warrior is only a part of a society. The warrior must serve the rest of the society. The warrior is not a justification in himself. He doesn't stand on his own by any means.
Now, the Odinists and Odinism has a pretty bad rap in some circles for its historic association with, in fact, Germanic peoples who, because of the Third Reich and some of the strains of aspirations back to pre-Christian religion by Nazis and neo-Nazis. There are, in fact, Odinists who are neo-Nazis and neo-Nazis who are Odinists. Is that a tension within contemporary Ulsa True circles or Odinist circles?
Yes, it's a continuous source of tension. I think we always find ourselves trying to walk a thin line between being proud of our ancestry as people of European origin on the one hand, and you know, not falling into a guilt trip or a self-loathing on the one hand, and avoiding the negative manifestations on the other. In our defense, I think I would say that the people of the more radical persuasion in Ulsa True have not been of great influence. Of course, there are people who would probably consider me radical, but obviously I think they're mistaken. And I think that we are a positive and constructive alternative to the negative influences that would tend to emerge.
Mm-hmm. You have argued that there is a natural affinity for particular descendants of particular peoples and the religions of their ancestors.
Yes. I do tend to see religion, or perhaps more accurately, religiosity, sort of an underlying stratum that supports formal religion. I do tend to see this as related to one's biological inheritance. I think that it does have to do with the group of which from which one comes. Well, here's a quote, in fact. Here's something that makes a lot of sense to me. The very concept of a chosen people implies a lost religious ethnicity. Most probably, religions do not, in fact, cross national and ethnic lines without losing their power and identity. It is probably more in the nature of things to have different groups with different religions. And the fellow who said that was certainly not a neo-Nazi. In fact, it was Vine Deloria, you know, a well-known American Indian author and activist.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that identifying with one's own roots by no means implies or necessitates any sort of a disparagement of other people or of their roots. And in fact, once you realize the uniqueness of your tribe, so to speak, it should give you more respect for the uniqueness of other tribes. And that's what we've tried to work with there, is that kind of an approach.
Which brings us back to Kennewick, man, that you're the reason why you consider yourself a party to this particular issue is that you see Kennewick Man as one of the ancestors of North American immigrants, of North European immigrants to North America.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we see him as a kinsman,
mm-hmm.
as a person to whom we are connected in a very fundamental way.
Well, I really appreciate you talking with us. This is, if people are more interested in following up on All So True and your beliefs and practices, they can check out the runestone.org/website. And are there other ways they can communicate with you?
Well, on there they will find our email address, which is alsotrue@oro, that's O-R-O, .net. Or they could write us at Post Office Box 445, Nevada City, California, 95959.
Thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having
me. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or want to share your thoughts about the show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com. Check back next week at the same time for Change Surfer Radio.